In this age of hybrids and straight electric vehicles, we get different sounds from our vehicles, but there's still a sense of expecting vroom when we go. If we get some other sound or sense, we worry and think about taking the car or truck to the shop. Zach Edwards is the owner of such a shop, Ashland Automotive, and he's our partner in a monthly segment we call the Squeaky Wheel. In this context, you are the squeaky wheel. Give us a call or email to talk about automotive issues you've had or are currently having. Again, 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Zach Edwards, welcome back.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Good to have you here. Let's start with something fairly simple, but could lead to something larger, which is just to keep an eye out for the things your vehicle is emitting, like fluids on the driveway. You know, we used to take it for granted that there'd be a few oil spots on the garage floor, and people used to scatter kitty litter sometimes to soak it up. That doesn't seem to happen as much anymore, does it?
Not really, and it shouldn't happen anymore. But, you know, if you're still driving an older rig, it's probably not uncommon to see some of that oil residue on the ground, or even if it's wet and raining, you see the sheen of the oil slick, and just one drop can make it seem like a lot of oil when it's really just a very small amount.
So was it usually oil that leaked out? I mean, was it just a matter of the seals breaking down with time?
Yeah, that's, you know, seals do break down with time, and often oil plug washers or gaskets aren't replaced with the oil change. And, you know, a lot of people, if they do their own oil change at home, they might forget about that little detail. And then, of course, the plug seals up 99% of the way, but you get that pesky, that little drip that just maybe one drip every 3 hours or something like that. So minor, but nonetheless, still a little bit of a leak.
Mm-hmm. All right, so it sounds like the basic recommendation here is that if anything is dripping off of your car, don't ignore it.
Yeah, you know, we always tell customers at the counter that leaks don't repair themselves. If they do, something very strange is happening that we're not aware of. So the leak generally is going to start small and get worse over time, and the rate at which it gets worse is, you know, for not a case-by-case scenario, but certainly it's not going to repair itself, and it's a good warning sign that if you see something dripping, make an appointment and get it looked at so that you can, you know, wrap your mind around how severe it is and what the risks are if you choose to ignore it.
How hard can it be for a technician to figure out where some of these drips are coming from? I mean, you know, something can leak from the engine, but it can also get diverted by another car part and end up dripping in a place where you wouldn't expect it.
Yeah, exactly. It seems simple enough, but it's not always as easy as you'd think. So, and especially with the case of oil, where it can, you know, it can run quite a distance and then drip off of a area, in some cases, very far away from the origin of the leak. And then you add in to this complex puzzle some of these phantom leaks where whatever it is that's leaking is dripping onto something that's really hot, kind of like a stovepipe. And then the fluid, whatever it may be, is either oil or antifreeze or power steering fluid, it instantly burns and, you know, turns into vapor and disappears. And so you're smelling something dripping, but you're not seeing it because it's dripping onto a stovepipe and disappearing instantly. So those can be kind of difficult as well. But, you know, this is part of a technician's job is to, you know, recognize when that's happening and look a little more carefully. And usually, with a little bit of time, you can, as a technician, you're able to figure these things out.
So that must be an interesting position to be in, though, on the garage end of stuff, though, because you're trying to get the car out, you know, turn it around, get the next person taken care of, et cetera. But sometimes things confound you.
Yeah. Yep, and that's where the communication part of things comes into play as a, you know, as a service advisor or shop owner or whoever you are talking to the car owner. What we try and really do is just be really straightforward with people and let them know, hey, this is taking time. We don't want to jump the gun. We don't want to replace parts you don't need. We certainly don't want to guess, and so we're just gonna you know, have to slow down or maybe drive the car further. Sometimes what we have to do, I should say farther, not further, but sometimes what we have to do is use an ultraviolet dye, which this is a really cool thing that you can add into the part that has the fluid. So either, you know, engine oil, you can add the UV dye to the engine oil, for example, and then circulate that dye throughout the engine. And then with enough time, depending on the severity of the leak, with a black light and some ultraviolet glasses, it's very, very helpful in spotting the very beginnings of an oil leak. And of course, I should say this is made a lot more difficult if the leak has been happening for a while. So if you have, this is where we oftentimes recommend UV dye. If there's oil everywhere, it's very difficult to find the source of the oil leak because there's oil everywhere. So if you put a little UV dye in, you can distinguish the fresh oil, the brand new leaking oil, from all of the existing oil that's caked all over the engine.
Interesting. So it sounds like it's not just a high-tech stuff like the ultraviolet dye, but also a training regimen of teaching technicians to ask the right questions and listen for the answers.
Yeah, and exactly. This is why so often the technicians don't talk to the customers. The service advisors do, because it's such a different skill set. Mm-hmm. You know, to ask the questions and to really get the customer to think about, you know, when are you seeing this leak, or when are you hearing that noise, or, you know, is it on rainy days, is it on dry days, is it when you're turning a corner? There's a lot of intermittent nature of these types of problems with cars, and so it's a totally different skill set that the customer service reps have versus technicians, and to be totally frank, a lot of technicians just don't possess the natural gift of gab, if you will. So they're more cerebral. They're thinking deeply about how machines work and how, you know, how they can almost see through walls and see through to the inner workings of the machine, and that's just such a different personality type and a different mindset, and that's a good reason as to why it's kind of broken up at the shop.
Zach Edwards, our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange in this month's edition of The Squeaky Wheel, where we talk about issues that have faced you and your vehicular care and repair. 800-838-3760 for your story of car or truck woe or surprise. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Let me come back to fluids then, because we haven't talked about this in a while. I mean, because we have talked quite a bit about oil changes and the necessity or less of necessity in these days of good synthetic oils. But what about the other stuff in the car? Like, how often do you need to flush and fill your cooling system? How often should your transmission fluid get a re-up? Should it ever be replaced completely? Brake fluid? What else you got?
Yeah, so start with the last one you mentioned first. Brake fluid is a fluid that it readily absorbs water, so it's called a hygroscopic fluid, and that fluid should be changed every 2 to 3 years depending on mileage, but it's more of a time-based thing with brake fluid. And the reason brake fluid, it's why it's so important to change it, because it absorbs the moisture, is because moisture contains air. And so therefore, when there becomes moisture contamination in your brake fluid, the fluid becomes more compressible. Generally speaking, in terms of hydraulics, you can't compress a fluid, which is why when you step on your brake pedal, you can transfer power all the way down to each wheel and slow that wheel down. It's because you're transferring power through hydraulic pressure. And if that fluid becomes contaminated with even, you know, 2 or 3% moisture, it can lead to a spongy pedal, and it can lead to brake fluid boiling, which is never good. That's what, big rig trucks have that problem when they're carrying big loads and they're coming down, say, the Siskiyou Pass.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
their brake fluid can boil. And then what happens, of course, is a lot of air is introduced into the system and you lose your brakes completely, which is why we see those runaway truck ramps.
Uh-huh.
You're familiar with those runaway truck ramps.
Oh, yeah.
Those are there for in the event that a truck, generally it's a brake fluid boiling situation where they just lose their brakes completely. So every 2 to 3 years on brake fluid is a really good interval. And I didn't even mention that probably the least talked about reason you change brake fluid is that when it becomes contaminated with moisture, the rubber seals, which seal in all the fluid so that there's no fluid leaking externally, those seals begin to break down over time. And the best way to keep those seals in good shape is to keep the fluid in good shape. So by changing your fluid, which is, you know, generally around $100, maybe now $130, $140, by changing that fluid every couple of years, you're actually extending the life of your brake calipers and your master cylinder and other components within your braking system that have rubber components and rubber seals. So again, a little bit of maintenance goes a long way in terms of, you know, creating longevity for your vehicle.
Well, let me come back to the boiling brake fluid here for a second, because is that because the heat is transferred from the brakes back through the brake lines into the fluid?
Yes, exactly.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Brakes can get so hot, and generally the brake discs, just like on a bicycle, I like to use this bicycle analogy because most people have seen a brake disc or a brake rotor on a bicycle. Built into that design of the disc is some sort of ventilation system so that as air flows over the disc, it can draw the heat away from the disc and, you know, help keep it cool. And so if somebody is, say, riding their brakes, what the term we use, riding the brakes, like not ever pumping the brake pedal,
mm-hmm.
that can generate a tremendous amount of heat, and the brake disc can't let go of that heat fast enough, and then the fluid in the caliper and surrounding components can absorb that heat. So, you know, modern braking systems, I'm simplifying this quite a bit, but modern braking systems they have been engineered to try and compensate for this potential for overheating your brakes.
Mm.
But it's still, you know, on a very steep mountain pass in the right conditions with the right load. I mean, if you were driving a pickup truck and you had you were towing a car trailer, say, I see a lot of Toyotas towing Toyotas. Do you see that, Jeffrey?
No.
I'm driving down the highway and I see a Toyota towing a Toyota, and because they're such popular trucks. And,
right.
You know, that's a lot of weight for a little Toyota truck to be towing an entire other vehicle. That could lead to a potential, you know, overheating of the brake system if you're coming down a steep pass.
Cause oh, sure. That's much more weight than it's supposed to be holding back, yeah.
Yeah, probably. I mean, every vehicle has a tow rating if it's meant to tow, but sometimes people push that limit, and you're fine if you're driving on the flats, but when you get into the mountains, that can really wreak havoc, and, you know, that could be a good segue into the transmission fluid. You're going to potentially overheat your transmission fluid towing a vehicle or just driving through the mountains with a full load. You've got a Suburban, and you have 6 or 7 people in there and all your luggage for a weekend trip. And, you know, you've got a big car top carrier on top loaded to the max, and you're driving through the mountains, and your transmission fluid is in already maybe mediocre condition, not the best condition. It can become too hot, and then internal components of your transmission start to, they no longer are protected from heat, which is one of the primary purposes of transmission fluid. So transmission fluid should be changed every 3 years, probably, 2 to 3 years. And again, a lot of new cars suggest that these are lifetime fluids, but our science suggests that's actually completely inaccurate. We see cars with that are falling out of warranty, maybe 75,000 miles. They've never had a transmission fluid change, and that fluid does not look good, and it does not smell good. and it appears to be abused and needing to be changed urgently. And so, again, just follow the advice of your trusted shop, and they should, you know, keep you on a good maintenance schedule. But these fluids do need to be changed usually every 2 to 3 years, depending on mileage.
We are talking to Zach Edwards on the Jefferson Exchange, the proprietor of Ashland Automotive. He joins us once a month for this segment called The Squeaky Wheel. We discuss car and truck care and repair issues, things that have gone wrong in the past or are going wrong now. Your question, your comment, welcome at 800-838-3760 on the phone, or send an email to jx@jeffnet.org. Email from Chris in Medford asking about low tire warnings. How low does it have to be for it to come on? Talk about the temperature effects in there and when it turns off after fully being inflated, et cetera. This is from Chris in Medford.
Yeah, so that's a great question. The exact difference I'm not quite sure of anymore because it's changing so much and it varies, I think, from manufacturer to manufacturer. But basically, that tire pressure monitor system is meant to give you time to get to the tire shop. So you don't want to ignore it for too long. It's looking for a difference of, you know, probably 10 or 15% would be a guess off the top of my head. But, you know, if all your tires are at 35 and it sees one at, 10% of that would be, 3.5 pounds lower, that's probably going to trigger that light. So, 31.5 PSI when the rest of them are at 35, that's going to turn that light on because it sees something is different. And these tire pressure sensors are, a lot of people get really frustrated with them.
And I really
understand why, because sometimes it can seem like that light is just always on, or that light can come on in October when it first starts to dip down into the 40s at night around here, and then it can go off as you drive and the tire heats up. You know, that's just as simple as the expansion of that of mm-hmm. the air pressure in your tire. So it's a very small amount. And generally speaking, just like with fluid leaks, that leak in the tire, or the reason that tire is low, unless it was just a little bit underinflated originally, the leak is probably going to get worse and you're going to end up with a flat tire. And if you drive on a tire that's too low, you can damage the sidewall. And so the tire pressure monitor system is actually, I think, a really great invention. It is meant to make you safer as a driver, but it can also save you money. I mean, if you find out your tire's losing air pressure and you get to the tire store and get it fixed, you've just saved yourself, not only bad timing on a flat tire on the side of the road, but you've saved yourself having to potentially buy a set of new tires. So,
yeah, worth looking at for sure.
Email
here from Patricia Ann in Eureka, going back to our conversation about brakes and heat, wants to know how regenerative braking works with respect to heat. This is on hybrids and is it on straight electrics too?
Regenerative braking systems, I don't know too much about them as far as all electrics go.
Mm-hmm.
But regenerative braking basically puts power back into the hybrid vehicle battery, and it is capturing energy that otherwise would be wasted. And so I'm not very knowledgeable on regenerative braking systems myself. This goes back to, I feel like I'm getting rustier every day, Jeffrey.
I sit
in the office more than I'm out in the shop, and I don't always stay abreast of all the current things. But basically, regenerative braking is capturing energy that otherwise would be wasted and putting that energy back into your hybrid vehicle battery. And that's what the name of the game is nowadays, is storage of energy and capturing energy. Instead of wasting energy, and that's the whole purpose of all of the new electric, with whether it's small engines or motorcycles or any of these this battery technology, everybody's trying to store energy. Mm-hmm. And braking is one of the biggest. It creates so much energy that could otherwise just, you know, transfer to somewhere else. And they're finding ways to trap it and hold on to it longer. And so that's the whole concept of regenerative braking.
We got time enough, like about a minute left for a question from Susan in Ashland, who writes, we have an older Toyota Corolla, which you have kept running for us through ongoing maintenance. Since the weather has gotten cold, our car makes a loud creaking noise when we drive and turn, which isn't much these days, the driving part, I assume. Feels like it could be the steering. What to do? Thanks, says Susan.
Yeah. Hi, Susan. So it's very, it's not uncommon at all for cars to kind of moan and creak as they as they age, and
just like their drivers.
Yes, and as they sit around a little bit more, especially now if people are driving less, it's not always a safety concern, but it could be. So, you know, the best thing is to, you know, try to describe it, bring it into the shop. But a lot of times, struts and suspension bushings become creaky. Mm-hmm. It can be a little difficult to find out which exact part is creaking, but it can be solved, and it's an indication of something that's just getting old and wearing out. It may or may not need to be changed urgently, but if it's bothering you or if you're concerned, I definitely recommend you bring it in and just try your best to describe it. And again, is it happening going around corners? Is it happening in the rain? Try and take some notes to help the shop out, and they should be able to figure it out for you.
As specific as you can be, that always helps. Okay, Zach Edwards is the owner of Ashland Automotive, joins us once a month for the Squeaky Wheel. We'll talk to you again next year. Zach, thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks, Jeffrey.